is love.
Enlighten us through the hearing of your holy word, O God, that we might learn from you how to live in the light. Amen. The first reading is from Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 through 14, and it is from the Message. You groped your way through that murk once, but no longer. You're out in the open now. The bright light of Christ makes your way plain, so no more stumbling around. Get on with it. The good, the right, the true, these are the actions appropriate for daylight hours. Figure out what will please Christ and then do it. Don't waste your time on useless work, mere busy work, the barren pursuits of darkness. Expose these things for the sham that they are. It's a scandal when people waste their lives on things they must do in the darkness where no one will see. Rip the cover off those frauds and see how attractive they look in the light of Christ. Wake up from your sleep. Climb out of your coffins. Christ will show you the light. So watch your step. Use your head. Make the most of every chance you get. These are desperate times. This is the word of the Lord. The hymn is number 280, Amazing Grace.
Thank you.
Our gospel lesson today is from the book of John, and it is John 9, verse 1 to 41, which happens to be the entire chapter 9. And it's about the man born blind. And I'm also reading from the Message. Walking down the street, Jesus saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, causing him to be born blind?" Jesus said, "You're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There's no such cause and effect here. Look instead for what God can do. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here, working while the sun shines. When night falls, the workday is over. For as long as I am in the world, there is plenty of light. I am the world's light." He said this and then spit in the dust and made a clay paste with the saliva, rubbed the paste on the blind man's eyes, and said, "Go wash at the pool of Siloam." Siloam means sent. The man went and washed and saw. Soon the town was buzzing. His relatives and those who year after year had known him as a blind man begging were saying, "Why isn't this the man we knew who sat here and begged?" Others said, "It's him, all right." But others objected, "It's not the same man at all. It just looks like him." He said, "It's me, the very one." They said, "How did your eyes get opened?" "A man named Jesus made a paste and rubbed it on my eyes and told me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' I did what he said. When I washed, I saw." "So where is he?" "I don't know." They marched the man to the Pharisees. This day when Jesus made the paste and healed his blindness was the Sabbath, the day the Pharisees grilled him again on how he had come to see. He said, "He put a clay paste on my eyes and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "Obviously this man can't be from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath." Others countered, "How can a bad man do miraculous God-revealing things like this?" There was a split in their ranks. They came back at the blind man. "You're the expert. He opened your eyes. What do you say about him?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews didn't believe it, didn't believe the man was blind to begin with. So they called the parents of the man, now bright-eyed with sight. They asked him, "Is this your son, the one you say was born blind? So how is it that he now sees?" His parents said, "We know that he is our son, and we know he was born blind, but we don't know how he came to see. We haven't a clue about how he opened his eyes. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown man. He can speak for himself." His parents were talking like this because they were intimidated by the Jewish leaders, who had already decided that anyone who took a stand that this was the Messiah would be kicked out of the meeting place. That's why his parents said, "Ask him. He's a grown man." They called the man back a second time, the man who had been blind, and told him, "Give credit to God. We know this man is an impostor." He replied, "I know nothing about that one way or another, but I know one thing for sure. I was blind, and now I see." They said, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" "I've told you over and over, and you haven't listened. Why do you want to hear it again? Are you so eager to become his disciples?" With that, they jumped all over him. "You might be a disciple of that man, but we're disciples of Moses. We know for sure that God spoke to Moses, but we have no idea where this man even comes from." The man replied, "This is amazing. You claim to know nothing about him, but the fact is, he opened my eyes. It's well known that God isn't at the beck and call of sinners, but listens carefully to anyone who lives in reverence and does his will. That someone opened the eyes of a man born blind has never been heard of, ever. If this man didn't come from God, he wouldn't be able to do anything. They said, "You're nothing but dirt. How dare you take that tone with us?" Then they threw him out into the street. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out and went and found him. He asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man said, "Point him out to me, sir, so that I can believe in him." Jesus said, "You're looking right at him. Don't you recognize my voice?" "Master, I believe," the man said, and worshiped him. Jesus then said, "I came into the world to bring everything into clear light of day, making all the distinctions clear so that those who have never seen will see, and those who have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind." Some Pharisees overheard him and said, "Does that mean you're calling us blind?" Jesus said, "If you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So the deeper we get into Lent, the longer our gospel passages seem to be. Isn't that right? It almost seems like the lectionary committee wanted to take as long as possible to get Jesus from the wilderness to the cross. But it's interesting, though, and I think I've said this before, that as we move through Lent this year, we get these snapshots, these moments in time of Jesus encountering and witnessing to ordinary people doing ordinary things. Nicodemus approaching Jesus with questions. The woman at the well drawing water to drink, but learning about the water that quenches all thirst forever. Today, the encounter is with a man born blind. Imagine that, if you will, for just a minute, being born blind. Never having seen the sky. Never having seen the grass. Never having seen your mother's face. Never having played games with other children, because playing children's games usually requires being able to see. Never learning a trade. Never having the kind of life that most people take for granted because you can't see. Imagine. The question on everyone's mind, of course, is why did this happen? Whose fault is it? Who sinned, the parent or the child? It's a natural question, a human question. We want to know why when tragedy strikes. We want to know why. We want to know who to blame. We want to know that there was a reason behind the tragedy, even if it's a bad reason. A reason beyond all imagination. For this man and his parents, or for the disciples who asked the question, the answer boils down to this: who was so bad that God would punish this man in this way? That's what most people made of misfortune in that time, that it was God's punishment in some way, that either these parents or this man had been so bad that God decided a fitting penalty would be for the man to be born blind. Now, I don't know about you, but I find this to be a little problematic. I mean, why on earth would we want to follow a God who would mete out this kind of sentence for some perceived slight? I mean, even though I know I'm not perfect, even though I know sometimes I bring trouble on myself, as we all do, I have been raised in a time of believing in things like the punishment fitting the crime, or that there is grace within God's often deserved anger at humanity. So the idea that something tragic happened to a baby and that's God's punishment, well, that doesn't sit very well with me. And it doesn't sit well with Jesus either. When asked the question, he says that neither of them caused this situation. Neither the parents nor the man himself had caused this. In our day of scientific knowledge, we know that any number of things could have caused this man to be born blind. Perhaps his mother had an illness at a particular point in her pregnancy. Perhaps it was a genetic condition. Perhaps something happened at the moment of birth itself. We don't know. We only know that he was blind at birth. And the question on the mind of anyone who saw it was, what happened? Whose fault is it? Of course we know Jesus heals the man, and God's works are revealed, and Jesus and his disciples move on. Then people start to notice, this guy, this man who was born blind, he can see. How can he see? And do we hear a hint of whose fault is this even now? The man is taken to the Pharisees to question him. They call in his parents. They demand to know, how could this happen? And we find out that perhaps this story isn't only about physical blindness, but also blindness caused by stubbornness, by a refusal to see and to be open to the possibility of something unexpected happening in their midst. We aren't surprised that the Pharisees react this way, but it also isn't so hard to connect this story to today, is it? Now that we know that it's about more than a man being born blind. Now, to get to the heart of the matter, that blindness is sometimes less about physicality and more about not wanting to see. Now, we don't have science to protect us, although I'm sure that there are psychological reasons for our refusal to see what is sometimes right in front of our noses. In fact, I've read about studies that indicate we humans, in simple terms, often believe what we want to believe, regardless of the evidence. That's why when your relative with whom you disagree about politics or something believes, when they believe something outrageous said by his or her favorite politician, that they will believe even when faced with evidence of the hard truth. It's why we're able to rationalize our loved one's bad behavior sometimes when we know that they're not going to change, but we believe that they might. But the thing about Jesus is, whenever he shows up, things are going to change. Things are going to happen. Think of one story, if you can, about Jesus in which nothing happens, nothing changes. When Jesus shows up in our lives, things change, and that makes some of us uncomfortable, especially if we are comfortable where we are, especially if we're afraid of leaving that comfort zone for fear of losing what we have for something that we don't know will be good for us. But think about it. Nicodemus was so changed that he ended up being the one to claim Jesus' body after crucifixion. And the woman at the well was so changed that she became the first evangelist. He told me everything I've ever done. Could he be the Messiah? And because of her, many believed. The man born blind was so changed that he could actually see, actually had his vision restored, and became a follower and was driven out of the temple for it. And this girl, me, I was so changed that I began to believe that I could speak in public, that I had something to say. Our world is kind of in a mess right now. Our country is in a mess. God's good creation is in a mess. And many people are just sitting around wringing their hands, pointing fingers, and trying to place blame. Because it's easier to debate responsibility than it is to solve problems. We see that in this story. Nobody else was able to solve the problem of this man's blindness, and yet they will debate endlessly about whose fault it was. We can see it in the government. We can see it in the church in declining attendance and declining influence on the culture. I can see it in myself when I don't know how to help the struggling couple who've stopped by to ask for help. I want to know how they got themselves into trouble. Which one sinned, the man or the woman? I want to know that by helping them, I'm not enabling them to continue to sin. And by asking these questions, I'm setting them up to fail in my eyes. And I am distancing myself from the real problem, which is, why are there poor people? Why doesn't our wonderful economy do a better job at finding jobs for people that pay enough to support themselves and their families? And where else am I blind? And why is it so hard to see sometimes? But the thing is, as we read the story of Jesus and the man born blind, we know that it's a story within a larger story, the story of God and the people of God, the story of a God who created human beings and deals with them over the course of a long history, loving them, saving them, calling them to love one another through justice and kindness, never giving up on them even when they turned away, finally coming to earth in human form as Jesus the Christ, then dying and rising. And we know that we too are a part of this story. We too are a part of this miracle. We know that we are a part of this story, this beautiful story, when our eyes are opened to the ways that God is at work in our lives, in the ways that God is at work in our church and our community. We are a part of the story of Jesus because we believe in the truth of his life, death, and resurrection, a series of events that heals the separation between humanity and God. We are a part of the story of the people of God when we worship on Sunday, like we are this morning, when we communicate with God through prayer and singing and meditation, when we are part of the story when we serve at Cornerstone, bringing not only a hot meal to those folks, but a caring spirit and a friendly smile. The story of God at work in the world throughout the history of humanity is a beautiful story. And we are a part of that story when we call on God, Christ, and Spirit, placing our love and our trust in them. We all have trouble seeing sometimes, and sometimes we become blinded by our own needs and wants and fears. Johanna and Bill and I spent yesterday at a Transformation 2.0 gathering, and we spent a lot of time talking about change and how we as the people of God know we need to change and how we figure out how we need to change. And it isn't about the music that we play on Sunday or the way the building looks or the programs we do or don't offer. Those are things that are important, and they might have really mattered 20 years ago or so. Or maybe they never mattered, I don't know. But I think sometimes that we are blinded by these things, these issues, to our true role as the people of God. Because our role as the people of God is to share God's love and grace with everyone around us, not just on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday night or when we're at church, but every single day of our lives in the places that we live and that we work and that we play. not just to bring people into our building, though if we are truly sharing the good news and living the good news, truly loving our neighbors in as many ways as we can, perhaps people will want to accompany us on this journey that we are taking as the people of God. We hope so, because that is our mission, to share the good news with everyone so that they will want to be a part of it. The story of the man born blind is a story about all of us, for we are all blind in one way or another. Following Jesus, understanding the stories and our place within them, is a way for our eyes to be opened and our lives to be changed. And as our lives are changed, we will be moved to change the lives of those around us to the glory of God and the inbreaking of the kingdom. Amen.